From the prophecy of Isaiah, the 9th chapter. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who dwelt in a land of deep darkness, on them has light shined. Thou hast multiplied the nation, thou hast increased its joy. They rejoice before thee as with joy at the harvest, as men rejoice when they divide spoil. For the yoke of his burden and the staff for his shoulder, the rod of his oppressor, thou hast broken as in the day of Midian. For every boot of the tramping warrior in battle tumult, and every garment rolled in blood will be burned as fuel for the fire. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder, and his name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and of peace there will be no end, upon the throne of David and over his kingdom, to establish it and to uphold it with justice and with righteousness from this time forth and forevermore. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Mangers were made for cattle fodder. A crude wooden trough, quickly thrown together with rough lumber and no particular skill or care. A lowly piece of barn furniture. And if in such a setting it became necessary to decide where to place a newly born infant, you would probably choose it. It would be just the right size, and the soft hay in it would be the same mattress that you slept on. And so that's where they placed him, another baby in crowded Bethlehem. There's something wonderfully exciting about an infant. This child is something new in the world. There are possibilities here that we cannot even begin to imagine. The baby in Bethlehem's manger created more than the usual stir of excitement. Visitors came in the night reporting singing angels, and Mary, pondering these things in her heart, must have thought, yes, I know a thing or two about angels myself. 12 days later, knowledgeable men from a distant nation arrived, talking about a special sign in the heavens. There may have been other babies born in Bethlehem at that time, but this one was somehow extraordinarily different. This new arrival in the manger was someone great. What is greatness? Who is a great person? Historians sift through the billions of inhabitants that have been on this earth from the beginning of recorded history. And they single out individuals here and there. We teach their names to our school children. These are the world's immortals. Generations to come will remember them. And they all accomplished something, something that is enduring. The world was not the same when they were through with it. They led armies. They led states. They wrote music. They painted pictures. They made discoveries. They achieved something. They left a mark on the world. The product of their genius is now the imperishable possession of our species. When Christmas rolls around, we find ourselves peering again into the manger and wondering if Jesus deserved the adoration he received. Were the estimates of the angels and the shepherds and the wise men and his mother Mary justified by what he became and what he did? Let me honestly ask, what did he do? What are his achievements? He never created a work of art or constructed a philosophical system of thought or published a book or led an army or controlled a political body or invented anything? Not one of them. Jesus did none of the things that have made other names famous. Yet we call him great. So great that no one else can even compare with him. Our news is full of outstanding athletes, entertainers, politicians whose personal lives are disasters. One of the saddest surprises is to discover in the biographies of the world's immortal contributors how many of them have been narrow, selfish, sordid in their ambitions, achieving one significant piece of work in the glory of which all of the weakness of their character is overlooked. Pick anyone you want. Even for the best, there is some flaw. Napoleon was a great leader of armies. But as an individual, he was petty and mean and selfish. Wagner wrote great operas that will be performed to the end of civilization's time. But the life Wagner lived was so sordid that I can't tell you the details of it from a Christian pulpit. The distressing thing about so many religious leaders from ancient history down to the present time is filled with uninspiring personal behavior. Now, Jesus, by the testimony of those who knew him, who went around with him, who were closest to him, tell us that he presents the world with its one unspotted life, its one mind without stain, one truly pure heart, one unblemished character. Imagine saying of anyone that he's without sin. But that's what they said about Jesus. Surely, they said, this man is the Son of God. Where shall we find some great person for comparison? He is unique. His name is Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Then let's see the depth of his achievement. Greatness can be measured by the effect it produces. Great people all share this. They make things happen. The atmosphere around our Lord seemed charged with possibilities for people. When he spoke, they responded with deep feelings. They literally went wild over him, some with adoration, some with bitter hatred. Here then is greatness. Jesus affected people. He changed their habits and opinions and ambitions. He changed their tempers and their dispositions. They were never the same again. And what he did then, he has been doing ever since. Wherever we carry the story of his life, death, and resurrection, the climate of thought and emotion and human behavior changes. You simply cannot account for the differences in the world's cultures without considering the influence of this one man, Jesus. We all like to talk about our ancestors. Perhaps yours came over on the Mayflower or some similar vessel from Europe or wherever. Seriously think about where we came from. Have you forgotten that only 1,500 years ago, the British Isles and Eastern and Northern and Western Europe were a wilderness? That section of the world was inhabited by tribes whose pastime was killing and vandalism. Their speech was so crude as to give them a nickname. Cultured societies listened to them speak and said, it sounds like bar, 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 bar. So they called them barbarians, our ancestors. They were little more than savages. When Julius Caesar crossed the English Channel 54 years before Christ was born in Bethlehem, he found the indigenous islanders dressed in animal hides. They did not know how to garden. They manufactured nothing but the simplest handicrafts. They lived on meat and milk, dyed their skin blue, apparently to make them look more horrible than they already did. They had not risen out of the lowest order of human society. Caesar looked around, took a few notes in disgust, and decided there wouldn't be much to be gained by conquering the place, which he did easily anyway. But you see, for all these years now, those people and their neighbors across the channel and across the Atlantic Ocean over here on this side have been growing under the influence of Jesus Christ. This child in Bethlehem has lifted us. It's one of the supreme miracles of world history. And over all is the overwhelming complexity of 20 centuries of change. There is this one man born in a stable manger. Non-Christian celebrations of Christmas miss this source of our strength as a society. It must be impartially recorded that the wonder of that night in Bethlehem has been sustained through all these years. Christ comes every Christmas with a fresh astonishment, and we turn from the manger to the world and say, "Behold your God."